Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. Excitement around artificial intelligence has been a key driver behind strong market performance over the past year. And this does make sense as it has the potential to be one of the most transformative technologies in modern history. That being said, widespread AI implementation is still in its early stages, and its broader implications for the economy and investing remain unknown. This has left many investors wondering, how will AI shape the markets and the economy? To help address this question, I'm excited to be joined by Joe Wilson, portfolio manager in our U.S. equity group, for a discussion on artificial intelligence and its potential impacts on the economy and markets. Before we begin, if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can now watch along on YouTube by tuning into our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked to the show notes. Now let's get started. Joe, welcome to Insights Now.
Thanks for having me on.
So the AI theme is pretty broad. What opportunities in the AI landscape are you actually most excited about right now?
The fact that it's broad is why I am so excited, because there's so many different areas for us to do work and research on. You know, if I were to put it in different time frames, I think, you know, the most interesting right now to me is within the actual hardware itself, semiconductors. I think this is an area where, as a world, especially within the U.S., we've underinvested in our electrical engineering capabilities, our semiconductor engineering capabilities, manufacturing. And I think the importance of hardware now as being kind of the foundational layer for all of these AI tricks that we experience, whether it's, within certain apps or co-pilots, I think that's really interesting. And the fact that the complexity is only moving up, and that there's only very few handfuls of companies that can accomplish these big feats, I think that's a really interesting area. If we extend the time frame a little bit, there's a really big debate happening right now on what's the impact within software, for example. I think that's a really interesting area to do work on, especially on the application side, because I think there's so much opportunity for the way that humans interact with compute to change. Mm-hmm. That could create a lot of disruption. I think over a longer period of time from that, it's going to be the evolution of AI as we know it today in terms of large language models, as that might not be, you know, the solution or the tech that actually advances AI to that next level. And then the impact that it has on the broader economy, the impact that it can have in areas such as transportation with autonomous driving, within diagnosis and healthcare, drug discovery, small molecule discovery. Like, the work that's being done highlights the importance of AI's impact on such a on a broader economy.
And so it's kind of hardware, software, and then everything that it can actually do when it's being implemented.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
There's a lot there. Obviously, we've had a great run in the stock market, particularly in AI-related stocks. And, that does bring up the question, do you think there's a bubble here?
Yeah, there has been a large run-up. And I think, you know, what we have to really focus on is that the one company that has had the greatest run-up also has had a tremendous revision, upward revision in earnings and valuation that actually support the move. It's that move and the speed of that move, I think, that, you know, drives this question about, you know, are we in a bubble? You know, time will tell if this is, you know, eventually maybe turns into a bubble. But the things that we see right now don't indicate that, because from an infrastructure standpoint, AI is the application, it's the interface, it's the way to describe, you know, the magic that we see in things like ChatGPT. But the infrastructure that supports that is just completely different than it was for the era of mobile cloud and internet. We're moving from x86 compute to accelerated compute supported largely by GPUs. That is driving a tremendous investment, only right now on the training side. And I think as we start to see the applications, the output of what this can do and the efficiencies that it can create, we're going to have a long tail of build-out to support these applications. That's the inference side. Mm-hmm. That could be 3 times the size of what training is today.
Yeah, and I think obviously we've also had a big focus on the very biggest companies, and of course one big company in particular, but the very biggest companies in the U.S. equity markets who are related to technology. But beneath that, are there other opportunities in AI that you think are interesting?
Yeah, you know, it's easy to say this is really expensive, and so only the companies with the balance sheet are going to, you know, be able to afford this. And that's true partially on the fact that they're maybe able to afford the infrastructure. But there's many other companies that will benefit from this. Just starting on the infrastructure side alone, we're now in buildouts of data centers that are 50 megawatts. Data centers are being planned for 100 megawatts. Somebody just bought a data center from a nuclear power company for a gigawatt. That's a tremendous amount of power that supports really dense accelerated compute. And when you start building these clusters at a size and scale that we've never seen before, you start hitting many other bottlenecks. You hit bottlenecks in power, you hit bottlenecks in networking, bottlenecks in memory and storage. Those aren't necessarily being solved by the hyperscalers that can afford the infrastructure. It's not necessarily being solved by the one company leading the GPU charge. These are being solved by companies that spent 20 years of R&D investments specific to power, networking, memory. And those are smaller cap companies and mid cap companies and even the traditional large cap companies. Remember when large cap used to be less than $1 trillion, yeah. right? Right now, that's the more immediate opportunity. And then I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity as well to be made within this discussion of software that supports AI workloads, especially in the enterprise. And that's more on the infrastructure software side. Large financial institutions that are thinking about ways of implementing AI, whether it is a centralized chatbot for employees, or whether it's a specific interface for sales teams or somebody on the service desk, they're trying to understand how do we use large language models within our company with our data, with compliance and security. A lot of that is a data problem. A lot of it is a labeling problem. Those are tools that we have today. There's companies, software companies today that provide those tools that have been providing for 10, 15, 20 years that I think have a much larger opportunity now because of this importance of something we've talked about for a long time, which is data is gold. Now we have a way to mine it, and I think that's a really big opportunity.
Interesting. And that really sort of brings me to my next question, which is what are the broader implications of AI investment and adoption? I mean, looking 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road, what does it mean for the economy?
Yeah, I think we're still on price discovery. Enterprises are trying to understand what's the return on investment. If I buy this add-on for my employees at $30 per seat, you know, per month, what's the return that I'm getting? And I think this is something that will take months to years to understand, like what is the actual value that I'm getting? But it's clear that right now it's about making, you know, a workforce more efficient. There's companies that brand their products as well. This is like the co-pilot phase. And I think that's the next 3, 4, 5 years where AI, where we may not have enough trust in the systems and the responses and the answers that we get. And so it's really good to make sure that we have, a human overseeing the output and maybe interacting, being an intermediary between maybe a customer and the large language model. But I think within, years 3, 4, 5, 6, there might be this understanding that the co-pilot is actually becoming the pilot.
Yep.
And that's a transition that, you know, an enterprise builds up trust. They feel better about the systems that they have in place to make sure the responses are appropriate. And that's really, I think, when we start to really transform the economy. And that's going to impact businesses across every single industry. You know, think about things that large language models are really good at right now is these monotonous kind of repetitive tasks. Maybe it's a similar question that you get from your customer base. Being able to provide that in a very human-like experience, maybe it's, you know, over voice or it's over a text chat. But that could replace tens of thousands, if not millions, of customer support, customer service workers, business process outsourcing, IT service management. Like, these are really big sections of the economy that I think even today, large language models are showing a capability to achieve, you know, human-like experiences.
Yeah, I mean, it strikes me as being a little bit like a lot of the, you know, frenzies that America has gone through over the years, with the moonshot or with the dot-com bubble. where, yeah, you can call about it. Maybe there was money wasted. There was a lot of interest, a lot of money thrown at it. But there were all sorts of benefits caused by people feeling like they just couldn't fall behind. They had to be ahead.
Right.
So, you know, if I either find a way to use AI better than the next person, or I'm going to be out of business. And so that pressure, whether, you know, perhaps it's, in some cases, it may seem exaggerated in the short run, but it does eventually yield breakthroughs in terms of productivity and the way we do things. So it will, you know, I agree with you, it will be transformative over time.
And the implementation, you know, from one company to the next might be dramatically different. And one company figures out a better way to implement it. But I also think that, like, the importance here on the economy is it's not just U.S. economy, but this is playing out on a global basis, right? I think oftentimes about the labor arbitrage that the U.S. has played on manufacturing, even service and support. But if there's ever been any hope, you know, within the U.S. political arena to bring back jobs and onshore, the reality is we don't really have the workforce, and we definitely don't have the appropriate labor rates either to make that economical. And I think, you know, AI is kind of this opportunity where it might make it a reality.
And so one of the things we're thinking about in our long-term capital market assumptions is we still think that at least in the next 10, 15 years, it may be actually more important for developed countries and emerging markets, because you really do have a scarcity of labor at the at the levels of sophistication that you need. And so as opposed to having an abundance of cheap labor, but that really forces you to have AI solutions if you're kind of short on the ground in terms of, physical intelligence or human intelligence.
Exactly. And this, all, you know, I this isn't a secret either, right? Yep. Like, the rest of the world understands this. And so that's why we are starting to see such a large increase in spend from other regions of the world to try to make sure that they don't give up a lot of the labor and the workforce that they've won and the GDP market share that they've won over the last mm-hmm. decade or two decades.
Any particular exciting developments you've heard very recently from AI companies?
There's a lot of really exciting developments. I think, you know, there's different experiences that we've seen from leading AI companies that I think have further push the envelope on humanizing AI, mm-hmm. you know, and I think about, you know, there was one within the last month that showed a tremendous interface between an app on a phone and the person that it was communicating with it, in terms of not just having really low latency. So like a conversation, I ask mm-hmm. you a question, I don't have to wait 10 seconds for you to respond, right? And that's really important to have a more manageable experience with AI. But then also having emotion, you know, in response, being able to understand sarcasm or humor or sadness, yeah. It was something like that was the magic trick, is that I think makes a voice interface much more applicable for many different apps that we use today. And then on the hardware side, it's the advancements that we're just continuing to see, whether it's in manufacturing in areas like Taiwan, whether it's the creativity on packaging mm-hmm. Semiconductors in a way that drives more efficiency, more performance for power. And then also, you know, looking even further out, it's like understanding that the architecture that we're using today on the semi side are dramatically changing. There's discussions around new substrates that could save a lot on power, new ways of connecting semiconductors together on the packaging side. I think that's really interesting. And if we extrapolate this out, right, we have to think of all these benefits that we see that on the semiconductor side that advance right now, that are advancing AI in the data center, are opportunities then to advance AI maybe at the edge as mm-hmm. well. The next big advancement will be when we have the right power footprint to be able to support a large language model on a device, being completely untethered, no mm-hmm. Wi-Fi, no cellular, but having the world's knowledge in, you know, your, wow. you know, 6-inch by 3-inch device that you can put in your pocket. I think that's going to be pretty incredible.
That's an amazing concept. I suppose one thing, you know, and finally, in terms of the holy grail for AI, I mean, it is all an attempt to mimic the behavior of our extraordinary human brains. But, you know, when you think about the amount of power necessary to run these data centers, you realize, you know, we're not there yet. And I guess my question is, will AI ever evolve to a point of creativity and efficiency that could match the human brain?
That's the goal, right? And I think that's what keeps advancing the progress that we see within AI and its capabilities. I don't know if we'll ever reach that level where AI will have the aptitude to be extremely creative. But I think that is, you know, where we're pushing towards. We were in California 2 weeks ago and meeting with 20 different companies. A lot of this discussions with each one was, and these are private companies, public mm-hmm. companies, and all of the discussions mostly were really focused around AI and the opportunities that each of these companies sees. You know, one thing that just kept reoccurring was the personalization aspect of AI. Right now, we don't have great methods for personalizing AI for each of us on an mm-hmm. individual basis. But I also think that, you know, if we take that a step further, we have to think about the different personalities that can emerge within AIs. And, you know, the reality is that you're a product, you know, and your brain is a product of your experiences. Very different than, you mm-hmm. know, my experiences that I've had it through my life. Your education, my education, the books you've read, the books that I haven't read. But those are the things that I think drive a lot of aspects, you know, like creativity or independent thought. That's going to be something that I think eventually emerges within AI. But you bring up a good point on power. Like, our brain is maybe the most efficient processor. It is the most efficient processor on the planet. The fact that it's able, you know, to form sentences with a very low power footprint, whereas we're, you know, powering a data center with 20 megawatts of power mm-hmm. to drive the inference of an output, if I ask an AI agent a question. Pushing the envelope on how we train, right? I think we talked about this recently about, you know, training a 15-year-old and a 16-year-old to drive mm-hmm. with hours of time in the car is very different than how we're training our autonomous driving systems today with billions of minutes of video that has created every single scenario 1,000 times over mm-hmm. To achieve a level that is, you know, okay, maybe not fully autonomous yet. That has to change. Like, there's going to be these unlocks where mm-hmm. we're going to be able to train things with less data without having the world's data. And I think maybe that's when we start to see some of these aspects like creativity maybe emerge as well.
It is an exciting new world and a brave new world. Joe, thank you for sharing your insights today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
On our next episode, I'll discuss the outlook for monetary policy and explore when the Federal Reserve could finally begin cutting rates. Until then, I invite you to check out my Notes in the Week Ahead podcast, where every Monday I share commentary on the latest in the markets and the economy to help you stay informed for the week ahead. For even more timely insights, you can also follow and subscribe to my content on LinkedIn. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning in today, and speak with you soon.
This content is intended for information only, based on assumptions and current market conditions, and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.